Hi, I'm Arturo Farrell, and this is Piano Jazz. I'm sitting in this week for Marion McPartland, and my guest is the extraordinary pianist named Vijay Iyer. This young Renaissance man is largely a self-taught pianist who holds multiple degrees in mathematics and physics. It can easily be said he's one of the most daring original artists of the under 40 crowd. Vijay, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you, Arturo. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure to have you, man. It's my pleasure to be able to talk to you. And I have quite a few questions to ask you. I always find that term largely self-taught interesting. Did you actually teach yourself music? I mean, did you actually sit down and figure out at a piano what you wanted to do?
Well, you know, I started with violin, and I actually had violin lessons for 15 years. I started when I was 3 on the Suzuki method, and then I got into, you know, I played the Western classical repertoire on violin. And somewhere along that time, when I was 5 or 6, I started playing piano by ear. And so I never had piano lessons, but I had lots of music lessons, a lot of musical exposure in a lot of different contexts. I mean, I grew up playing in orchestras, and then I was in a rock band in high school, and then I joined our school jazz ensemble, and you know, so I learned in formal and informal ways. I mean, I when I first got interested in jazz, I started checking out a lot of records from the local library and tried to learn a bit about the theory and the history, and it just sort of grew little by little. And you know, I didn't go to music conservatory. I had a decidedly different path from that, which we could talk about or not.
Please. Because there's such, the interesting thing today, of course, is that jazz is an educational thing now. I mean, there's jazz education all over the United States anyway. And, but you took a different path. Can you elaborate?
Well, you know, my father was scientifically trained, and they very much valued education, like a lot of immigrant families do. And so I was sort of groomed for the sciences, and that's
right.
Even though I was, they drove me around to music lessons, you know.
Well, that was probably considered part of a good education, a good background for any young educated person to have music as part of their lives. Well, my father, Chico Farrell, was supposed to be a lawyer, and he would sneak out of the house at, you know, every night to play in Havana nightclubs and then go to law school all day. So I think that I can relate that shock of of discovering all of a sudden, oh my God, I'm a musician.
It's like, how did I get here?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, it's I wouldn't trade any of it.
I know this is all great, but people are dying to hear you play, as I am, and we'd love to have you perform for us. Would you do that for us, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay.
I'd like to play the standard "I'm All Smiles." I was inspired by this piece when I first heard it played by Jerry Allen, the great pianist. You know, I'm young enough to have been influenced by her pretty deeply, especially the way she synthesized a lot of the tradition of people like Monk and Herbie Nichols and Andrew Hill and Duke Ellington and Bud Powell and that whole school of playing, and made something very personal with it. So I remember hearing her play this about 20 years ago with Charlie Hayden and Paul Motion, and also a little bit later with Betty Carter, which totally knocked me out. So this is, I guess it's fair to say it's an homage to her.
Lovely.
Jerry, I'm All Smiles.
Thank you. I think that was absolutely amazing. So many different sounds in your playing that I hear, so many different influences, and yet completely Vijay.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about your compositions as a composer. What is your process? How do you work? Are you like a birthing, painful composer, or are you one of these people that jots? Tell us about yourself as a composer.
Well, you know, for those of us who, A, compose for improvisers, and B, are improvisers ourselves and band leaders, like yourself, our process is a bit different because we're constantly test-driving ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as improvisers, we're always taking chances and risks and trying things just to see what happens, you know? And so I find that that informs the composition process so much, and it enriches it. And, you know, when you have something down on paper, it's not finished.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not at all for people like, for the music that we do, you know?
Right.
For me, when I compose, I'm thinking, okay, what can I put down on paper to set that process in motion? Ultimately, it's not really about me as a composer. It's about what that provokes in everybody else or in myself
mm-hmm.
as a player. You know, writing for a small group that where, you know, we get to try things on the bandstand and adjust and kind of refine. And that sort of is, to me, the most stimulating part of the process. And I find that it never really ends, actually.
Well, now, it's a little different, for instance, than in the case of your first orchestral work, Interventions, that was commissioned by the American Composers Orchestra.
Yeah.
That involved dealing with a lot of people who do not work in the realm that we do.
Right.
And I wonder if you can tell us what that was like.
I have to say, I've never spent so much time on such a small amount of music.
Lots
I mean,
of
like
paper.
6 months of my life in 15 minutes, literally. So, you know, that was
so that was like a birthing experience.
It was more like that. I mean, you know, at the same time, the piece was called Interventions because I was interested in that dialectic between, you know, we always think of things in terms of composition and improvisation like they're opposites, you know, like you write for these performers who are experts at following directions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're also experts at interpreting, and they bring some knowledge to that process. So, you know, one of my techniques in that piece was to create a page of music and let the performers make their own choices about how to interpret. So there were moments in the piece which ended up being called interventions inside of the piece where you heard individual intention. That's sort of what I was interested in, is can you actually create that sound of people making decisions in real time? What does that sound like?
Mm-hmm.
That's what improvisation is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's more music in a minute with me, Arturo Farrell, and my guest, Vijay Iyer. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. You're listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and friends. I very much would like to play one of your compositions with you.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
It's called Abundance. And even though the title is Abundance, there's a little bit of sadness in the song. It's actually using this interesting raga, or at least the pitches from a raga that's a very rare one called Rasika Priya. And it has all these interesting large intervals in it. So it gives it the scale this irregular shape. And so I drew these harmonies out of the scale. And so you get these interesting connections that you wouldn't necessarily have in normal tonal music. So let's see what we can do with it. I know you're going to surprise me with some interesting...
Hope I play it well.
I know you will. Thank you.
Abundance. Talk about an abundance, man.
Well, you made
I feel
it
like it's Thanksgiving again.
You filled it up with quite a lot of treats and delicacies.
Yeah. I think you provided the the bulk of that, man. That was a heavy meal. Why is the food analogy so present in my mind? It's been like that for the past 20 years. You know, I wanted to ask you a few more questions that I think some folks might not know that you have a bachelor's in math and physics, a master's in physics and an interdisciplinary PhD in technology and arts. How has your work in science and math and physics influenced your writing and your playing?
Well, you know, I was playing music before I was doing science, and the studies that I've heard about seem to suggest that actually music prepares you for a lot of other kinds of thinking, and particularly, handling abstract quantities and that kind of symbolic reasoning that we do when we play music. You know, even my child knows that a certain note is higher than another note, and that means that there's something that's increasing in intensity or in magnitude as you go up the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So these kinds of quantities that you absorb as a child when you're learning music, they're abstract in a way, you know. So being able to move from that kind of thinking to mathematics and physics and stuff, I think that's sort of, because I started playing violin when I was three, like I said, that seemed to help push things along for me. But, you know, I also do think a lot about the science of music and, for example, the physics of sound. I think a lot about harmony in terms of timbre and resonance and, the physics of acoustics. And then I also think a lot about structuring music using kind of elaborate sort of symmetric rhythmic structures and things like that.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
The thing is that that's not necessarily only grounded in my scientific background. It's also something that is part of Indian music. But, you know, for me, the point is to find the soul of it. And
I was going to go there. I was going to ask you, because I think that a lot of whatever a person believes in terms of faith, there's a lot of design and symmetry in nature. In fact, there's a study about this where there's a symmetrical design to cellular structure and all kinds of coordinating kind of structures in nature that do the same thing.
Yeah, it's true.
And I was wondering if that was a source of inspiration also on a somewhat, I guess the word, spiritual level for your writing, that these designs are so prevalent in nature.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think, again, like when you look at the way that those kinds of mathematical techniques are used in Indian music, it's not just to flex some mathematical muscle.
Right.
It's because it's really revealing an order that the universe already has.
I think Olivier Messiaen was very influenced
by
this. Yeah,
it's true, he was.
I think I read that in his treatise on theory.
Yeah.
That he was very, very influenced by.
Yeah. It's interesting because then you kind of put yourself in dialogue with something that is not yourself, you know. And working through those kinds of systematic challenges. I mean, the example we all know is Coltrane playing Giant Steps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is an artificial piece of music, you know. If you look at the way the harmonies are structured, it's a symmetric arrangement across the octave.
Right.
And it's something that's really counterintuitive if if you're used to tonal music because of the way it jumps through key centers. And he pushed himself through that kind of rigorous procedure in order to achieve something. And, you know, the rest is history, you could say.
Of course.
And you could also say that it's because he did that we then had a love supreme.
Well, really, a lot of what we do is mirror that.
Exactly.
The desire that we reflect that some sort of divine design. I mean, that sounds heavy, but but I think that that's what we try to do when we play music. We try to reach out past ourselves.
Right, exactly.
You know? I'm very excited that we're going to play something together. It's something of mine that I'd like to tell you a little bit about it if I can. It's a piece called Blue State Blues. I won't say if I was getting the blues or giving the blues, but I did write it 8 years ago and recently had the blues eradicated to some degree. And
though they do persist.
Well, they have a tendency to do that, the blues.
Yes.
This is Blue State Blues. Thank you. Wow. That was pretty wild, man.
You're crazy.
I think
always
you're
knew
the
this
one.
About you.
No, I think you're the one that was taking us in wild and woolly directions.
I was just honoring the sentiment of the composition. I was trying anyway. But I would ask you, do you still have the blues?
Not when I'm playing with you. Not at all. Well, there's more to come with Vijay Iyer. You can find artist information, set lists, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. I'm Arturo O'Farrell, sitting in for Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. I'd like to play something for you if I can.
Oh, I'd love to hear you.
This is a piece that I wrote for my wife, and her name is Allison. And it's a piece that I call Allisonia because she lives in a very peaceful universe. Hmm. She lives in a place where everything is ordered, sleeping dogs lie, and everything is very relaxed. I live in the complete opposite universe.
I was going to say,
I live in
the
universe of chaos. I can never find my keys. And I think one of the reasons we get along is because she's, you know, delights and thrills me every day, and I exasperate her every day. But I call this happy place that she lives Allisonia.
Well, I'd love to hear it. Thank you. Well, it was beautiful, man.
Thank you, bro.
I feel like I know your wife a little bit now.
It's funny, you know, I write a lot of music for people. I find that people are a great source of amusement and inspiration to me.
Yeah.
Do you do that too? Do you write?
Well, sometimes I write music for people who are going to play it, you know, and keeping that in mind. But that's a good. But I haven't actually got to the point of making musical portraits. But you've inspired me now.
You know, it's interesting. Marion McPartland is known for musical portraits. And has featured musical portraits on piano jazz for many years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that it's something that probably is not an uncommon theme in a lot of music, the idea of capturing people on paper.
Yeah.
As opposed to photographs.
And more than on paper, in sound.
It's true. And you can imagine that, getting somebody and disturbing the vibrations in the air with their personage.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to ask you a quick question, man. What's on your iPod? What do you have on your iPod?
Well, I just got this phone iPod thing, so it has...
An iPhone.
It has a lot of my own music because I use it to demo stuff when I'm doing lectures and things.
Mm-hmm.
And it has some underground hip hop and electronic music stuff, and some classical music, and some Indian music. You know, quite a wide range of things. You know, I keep one ear to contemporary pop music. I always have. I mean, I grew up listening to.
It's pop music. No.
I'm a child of the 70s and 80s and 90s somewhat, and you know, I was really deeply affected by Michael Jackson passing, actually.
Yeah, I think we all were.
You know, because that was like pivotal music for my childhood.
Sure.
You know, and when I think about the way the old masters of this music used to play music that was for them full of memory.
Mm-hmm.
And rich with significance and history and resonance for their own experience. You know, I find that when I'm doing covers, for example, I like to try to do the same thing.
I think Michael Jackson reached across many boundaries. I mean, the very first single I literally bought was ABC.
Wow.
With the Jackson 5. Literally bought, that was the first single I bought. And I think that there isn't a jazz musician alive, hopefully, who doesn't understand the impact of that culture, that music, and specifically Michael Jackson.
You know, I remember the day that he passed, it was really like you could feel it on the street. It was as though everybody...
We were playing in Birdland, and a young man came up to me, and, you know, we had the big band, and he asked us if we played any Michael Jackson, and I tried to explain that big bands don't just play requests, but I did dedicate the evening to Michael, and I remember quite a few people were broken up.
Yeah,
I think it's important. I think it's I think you're doing something very important too by playing covers and playing from the pop repertoire, because I think that is like what our heroes did. I mean, Miles Davis took "Bye Bye Blackbird" and created incredible beauty and magic with it, you know. And it's not that this music is somehow inferior, but it is incredibly important because it affects our daily lives.
That's right. If I may, I'd like to do Human Nature.
Would you please?
I had the opportunity to give a solo concert not long after the King passed, and I did this piece, and people were crying.
Yeah.
Because it was that kind of moment. Not necessarily because of how I played it, but just because of what the you know, I'm very aware of the sort of extra musical resonance of our actions, and I like to keep that in mind.
We'd love to hear you play this. Thank you. I'm pretty sure that was the first time that a Michael Jackson piece was performed on piano jazz. I'm not sure, of course, because I'm not a historian.
But, well, it's worth reminding ourselves that Miles Davis played the song.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know,
25 years
ago. You know, and the great and wonderful magic of the music that we call jazz, for want of a better word,
yeah,
is that we take the things around us and improvise on them,
yeah,
the things that matter to our lives.
Right.
You know.
And then also, we get to kind of use them to tell other stories that were never intended necessarily by the original creators. I mean, when you hear Coltrane playing My Favorite Things.
Rogers and Hammerstein did not intend for...
He's not playing about whiskers on kittens, right, and stuff. No. You know, that's something else entirely that he brought to the music that even seems to eclipse the original song.
Well, I think we frame our lives in... reference points.
Yeah.
We frame our lives as we watch our children grow, songs and themes and things that are seem mundane on the outside are pregnant with incredible meaning.
Yeah. I mean, music gives us these kinds of points of experience that we remember, you know? I mean, one thing I've been thinking about lately is that you asked me what's on my iPod. You know, part of what bugs me about digital music, meaning the digital medium for music, is that you never ground it in physical experience in the way that, you know, we used to have LPs or cassettes or CDs that gave us something to sort of grasp and look at and explore and unfold and unpack. And that sort of physical experience with some artifact of the music actually helps place the memory in our bodies in a way, you know, and the fact that now all you do is click on things and the clicking on one thing is just like clicking on another thing. It makes music a little less significant to us. And I mean, I'm not a Luddite by any stretch, but I do miss that quality that we had with recorded music.
But I agree with you, and I think that's a beautiful sentiment. I'm having a great time with Vijay Iyer, and we'll have more music in just a minute. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm Arturo O'Farrell, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends. I think one of the great things that I find in your music is a delightful sense of playfulness and almost humor.
Well, but I'd love to play another piece with you. Maybe we should close the show with this blues.
I think that'd be a great idea.
What
is the name of this? Can you tell us about this?
It's called AI.
Can you tell us a little bit, for those of us that don't know, what AI stands for?
Sure. You know, I wasn't trying to do anything grandiose with this tune. It's a blues head and it's meant to have fun with. But AI stands for artificial intelligence, which was a area of research and still continues to be, but it was more, they used that term in the 80s and 90s to talk about the computational modeling of human thought and cognition. So that, in fact, I wrote this tune back then in the 90s when I was doing that PhD that we mentioned earlier and was sort of doing a little bit of reading on the subject, though this was not meant in any way to really depict that. Just basically throw a spit wad at it from the back of the class.
So it's not really about people who think they're smart artificially.
No, so that would be a good
It works on a lot of levels, actually.
Yeah, true. Well, let's give it a whirl. I mean, I know that you're going to scare me once again.
I think it's the other way around. Shall we?
Sure. Here's... Thank you. Well, once again, Arturo, you're out of your mind.
I think this time it was your fault. I swear you wrote that piece. It wasn't mine.
Well, thank you, man. It's been a pleasure and honor making music with you.
Oh, no, it's been my pleasure, my honor.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with guest host Arturo O'Farrell and today's guest, Vijay Iyer. Join us each week at this time when Piano Jazz brings you outstanding artists for conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Tyler Hartman. I'm mastering engineer David Mitchell. Production assistant Grant Jackson. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To find out more about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz, or to listen to a recent program, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. There you'll also find a link to our free weekly preview podcast, Piano Jazz Shorts. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Jazz Times Magazine, delivering jazz news, insight, and advice since 1970 at newsstands everywhere and on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.